that many of these individuals
Mics are live.
We are now reconvened for the administrative portion of the meeting. We don't have any consent matters, so moving into discussion. First is Pat. There you are, Pat. MDU, the 88 megawatt simple cycle combustion turbine siting application.
Right. The number one on the administrative matters and number three are related. So I might be talking about both of them at the same time.
Okay, sure.
The last week, or last commission meeting, we had a discussion about North Dakota Century Code that provides for, if you have a designated corridor or a designated site, the Century Code provides that you can make additions or improvements or facility capacity changes within those geographic boundaries by only certifying to the commission that you're not going to impact any avoidance or exclusion areas and that your construction is wholly within the designated site. And last commission meeting, the commission directed staff to put together a policy, a memorandum. And so we've done that. But this time, at this meeting, I'm also bringing to the commission's attention a filing by Montana Dakota Utilities, which in their certification to order provisions includes a paragraph that we didn't talk about last time. And that it's if you have the policy memorandum that we distributed, the language that I'm talking about now that is in addition to previous language we've used about, but it's the second bullet where the language says the company understands and agrees that in the event the company desires to construct within any site granted by a certificate of site compatibility in this proceeding, an energy conversion facility that was not requested in the commission's application in this proceeding, the company shall apply for a certificate of site compatibility for the facility. So we're talking about language in our certification that is affected by the North Dakota Century Code sections that we call the footprint law, where the Century Code allows them to make additions or improvements or changes within a designated geographic boundary. And so this is the policy memorandum that staff is presenting to the commission for approval. And if the commission, the one that we passed out for your review, did everybody get that? Okay. And if you're in agreement with that, we also have a prepared motion for the commission.
I'm going to, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Christman.
I'm going to say that I was focused maybe too much on the meeting agenda items and the other things going on in the world and didn't focus on this as much as I intended to. As I read this, we're drafting a policy memo of us that says the company understands certain things. It seems to me company understands it. That's more like something that would be done in a contract or a waiver or something that they sign, not that we just proclaim what they understand. This seems confusing to me.
Well, the bullets in the memo are only are the language that are in the certifications to order provision. And so when the company signs those, they are saying, yes, we understand and agree to these provisions. What this memo is doing is really, if in the first paragraph, the last part of that says, the commission waives compliance with provisions adopted in past orders, including these two bullet items.
Oh, so these bullet items are the things that are in
yes.
the waivers that they've signed.
In the certifications that they've signed.
Oh, certifications.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep, that's just for identification purposes.
So we're waiving the provision that they have to obtain written approval from the commission and that we can only grant it after notice of opportunity for hearing.
But last week during our discussion, you
right.
gave us directive to do that and to
yep.
provide a policy amount. When this
just confirming that that's right. one of the provisions that
that's
we're
correct.
Waiving. And then we're waiving this second one that they shall apply for, that they have to apply for a certificate of site compatibility for any, basically, thing that wasn't requested in the first permit.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that's what we, I think that accurately okay. summarizes what we said we didn't need to do anymore because of the footprint law.
So now that I've read this more thoroughly, now I have a different question. Okay, now I think I get what we're doing here, but that's not as I recall the discussion. As I read this, it looks to me like we're saying, yep, all those. Anything we've approved in the past, you want to build something new in that footprint? We've waived these provisions that would prohibit it. I thought we were saying that they notify us and our director of public utilities can waive it, or if the director sees some potential problem, would bring it to the commission for further discussion.
Well, first of all, they still have to comply with the sensory code.
There's a certification requirement.
There's a certification
to do these footprint.
They have to notify.
So they have to certify that they're going to do all these things, and
right.
there will be notification to the commission, which usually then Pat is the one at this point in time who looks at those, and we do have the discretion at any point to request a hearing from a company if they're over you have any concerns, regardless of that set forth in the law or not.
Okay. And the sensory code defines the types of activities that would fall under the footprint.
Now this looks pretty good. Sorry,
well,
I didn't get my homework done in advance.
No, but I think you made a good point, Randy, and there was more talk about the staff discretion. That's not captured here.
Sure.
That's correct. We are not. This is the commission is saying if these two provisions are in your orders, we're waiving we're waiving compliance with those provisions.
This basically, my concern with this is that this tells you, I don't have anything to do here. And that's not what we said.
Sure.
That's right. It does do that. So if
yeah.
you still want staff to do something.
Well, I think we said that we needed to have the safeguard that you would come to us with issues that you thought we needed to hear about if you had concerns about that. And I don't see that captured here. I feel like this would tell you, Pat, not to do anything, and that you would, even if you had concerns, be like, well, sorry, it says here that we're waiving it, so I'm not saying anything.
So
I guess that isn't how I see
right
it.
To deny. How do you want it?
I think we just need to have something about staff captured, staff's review and in, you know, will generally waive, but reserves the right to bring projects that raise a concern to the commission for approval or something to that effect.
So upon staff review and consent, or upon staff review and approval, something to that nature?
Under the sensory code, the company still has to file, and if the commission has concerns, there's still a review there, and the commission can express concerns of any of the filings that they make under the sensory code. It doesn't take that away.
You're saying the commission, and when I hear commission, that means us.
Right.
Right, but somebody has to bring it to the commission's attention.
Okay.
Even under the sensory code.
Just maybe you can include a little bit of clarification there so that any future staff might also know that there's an understanding here that the staff is going to flag things that might fall outside of this that we should be looking at.
I think that's an appropriate change, particularly in light of the fact that this is actually an internal policy memo. This is actually a directive to staff to provide this waiver. I didn't really think about it on the front end, but I don't know if I was really thinking about that specifically as opposed to these when I was discussing with Pat. So I think that's a simple change. We could bring it back to you.
Okay.
Okay.
That would be my only. Otherwise, I think it captures what we intended. You know, the substance is right on.
In the meantime, should I respond to, we still have Belfouche, hasn't been responded to yet, and MDU Heskett 4 hasn't been responded to. And so.
Didn't we decide Belfouche last week?
We were provided direction to address
due
that
to
one
policy
specifically.
Memo.
Well, we were of how to treat that and to provide a policy memo of how we're going to be doing that.
Other ones,
this,
but
this is how I understood it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I thought we did made a decision on Belfouche that we don't need to revisit now. And then we went beyond and said, let's capture this process in something for moving forward.
Okay.
I was under the same impression, which is why I didn't say Belfouche. So that's right. We are done with it.
I hope so.
Yeah. I don't think they've been notified yet.
They haven't. No, I will do that right away.
Okay.
Because I think we all agreed that one could go forth under the new law.
And then Heskett 4?
I'm not up to speed on Heskett 4 and what they am I? Maybe
that's,
I am, but I've forgotten.
That's the 88 megawatt.
Well, this
what
is
are they asking for?
They're putting in a second gas turbine, 88 megawatt gas turbine, in the same site as the initial gas turbine.
They built of course, as you'd expect, they constructed the site to accommodate a
larger
another unit and to replace the Heskett 1 and 2.
And they've notified us that they intend to do that under the footprint law.
Yes.
And you just haven't responded. Are they asking for a response?
Well, they have their certification to order provisions as these two paragraphs.
Yeah, I think it treats this treated.
Don't we have the informal scheduled at the end of April?
Yeah, but that's on the recovery of that. That's not on siting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I think this is a classic example of where we're relying on our people to make a call whether it just looks fine or whether to bring it forward to the commission. You know, it's not like a generating plant that's out in the middle of the oil patch and miles away from anybody. It's right on the edge of town. Most people driving by think it's in town. It happens to be on the other side of the city limits sign, line. But, you know, I think this is one free to use some discretion on if there's any reason that you see for safety concerns or anything that would come up with siting to delay that or bring it to us as opposed to just the approval.
Okay. So
I don't have any issues with them moving forward.
Okay. So I can use my discretion on whether to send them a letter waiving those provisions.
Yeah, I think use the directives outlined here as.
So, are you going to
so
want
we have to
make
wait.
The motion? Or
I think we'll have to wait to see the revised policy. Okay. So we can just hold off on that.
Okay. Anything else on that? Or are we concluded with item number one and item number three?
We have concluded, yeah.
We are concluded. Okay, Stacy, why don't we. After the forum communications online subscription, maybe then we can just have you talk about the news release question or item you mentioned.
So the forum communication subscription, as I'm sure you are all aware, they now require a subscription to view their online articles. You get so many free and then you'll start to get the message that you need to subscribe. So it's been brought up by, I think, at least a couple of the commissioners about looking into getting a subscription. I did talk with them yesterday. It costs $9.99 a month, so $10 a month, and it will let you have two people on at a time. that is a little more restrictive than the Tribune. We pay $14.50 for the Tribune right now, which is a little more, but they let us have, I believe it was like five people on at a time, but that's the way the forum has it set up. So $10 a month, you can have two people on at a time.
Does that mean two users total registered or two people looking at it at the same time?
Looking at it at the same time. It would be the same Tribune. We'll get one login that will be distributed to the same group that has the other ones, and it just might be
you can have
a little,
as many devices as you want, but only two active at any given time.
That's what they said, yeah.
If someone's not using log out or you're going to clog one of the seats.
Yeah, and I don't know how I don't know how that works exactly. We've never had any problems with the Tribune one from what I've heard, and I leave all my devices logged in, my phone's logged in, my computer. So I tend to think it knows when you're active, but I don't know for sure.
So in this instance, if your phone was logged in and your
computer at work was logged in, that's two right there. But
well, I don't know. Why don't we start with two or, you know, one license, see how it works, and if it's that big of a problem.
Yeah,
and
we can.
We really need.
We can see how it goes.
Get a second license if absolutely necessary.
Yeah, we can see how it goes. But yeah, $10 a month for one subscription. So
sounds good. Thanks, Stacy.
Yep, I'll go ahead and get that set up and send you guys the information.
Okay, and the news release.
Yes. So I just had a question. I've been holding the news release for the March 30th hearing in Newtown because I wasn't sure whether we'd have it, cancel it, revise it, and I haven't been in on all the conversations about how you guys are handling the hearing, so I just wanted some advice as to whether more language needs to be added to the news release or what we're doing for those. So,
well, I think that
that's that the gas processing plant.
The language that Jack added to the notice for this upcoming hearing, the B. Sanderson gas processing facility should definitely be included. The commission will consider written testimony received up to 5 days after the hearing to accommodate members of the public that are unable to attend, blah, 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 because of coronavirus concerns. We probably, though, need another statement of whether we're discouraging people to come or not.
And it does it matter that that language wasn't in the notice, the original notice for that hearing?
I don't.
Does that matter?
I hope we can adopt that.
So, like, this hearing on the 30th would have been noticed quite a while ago already, and so that, like, five-day thing wouldn't be in the notice for that hearing.
For the original one? I mean, a notice could have changed.
So that doesn't matter.
Be both publication requirements. Like, is this going to be published
twice? This is just a news release we're talking about. That's why I'm saying.
It wouldn't really matter then for the purpose of a news release.
Okay.
I'm assuming this, because we issued this notice, meets the publication requirements.
Right. So
that will be fine, even if we did a previous notice that was different.
Okay.
This would just tell them that we'll accept comments for a few days afterwards in the press release. And we will anyways. We just missed the opportunity to emphasize that to them, and so if they saw that and not this, they might think that this was their only chance to come. And
the question really is, on the one that we've already noticed and didn't include this, can we now go back and add this as, like, we're going to just do this?
That's what I'm saying.
Can we just do that? Because we didn't include it in the notice, can we just declare we're going to keep this open for five more days?
Well, it's in the commission's discretion of what to accept into a record and how long to keep the record open.
Okay.
So for example, if we have this Liberty Midstream hearing that came up and we're saying, hey, we'd like to leave the record open for an extra 5 days, all comments received will be added in for the record for consideration, you certainly could do that.
Okay. So really the policy is the commission will be accepting written comments into the official record for a future hearing, for all future hearings until further notice, and we will be keeping the record open for five extra days to accommodate public testimony by written testimony.
Okay.
But then the next question becomes, and I think we should include that in the news release, do we discourage people from coming? and then say direct them to write written testimony.
We have a mechanism to, well, we talked about this. Did you get a hold of Dakota Sound in terms of, do they have video capability?
I have a call in. We're not certain at this point.
Because if they did, and maybe even if they don't, we still discourage the public. But if they did, you know, we would discourage the public from attending. However, the meeting is accessible.
And then, of course, we certainly have audio capability to do that. We may not have video. Yeah. But in these circumstances, we certainly have the capability of doing audio back through our broadcast
system. And I realize on the Dakota Access hearing, that was not something we orchestrated. It just happened because DCN?
Yep.
I believe it was. Just happened to broadcast it, or not happened, but they wanted to broadcast.
It was actually Beck Communications.
Or Beck. Yep. Beck, which was fantastic from...
Yes.
I'm thinking as we talk, though, that... maybe we need to just start now and make that hearing in the field just the obligatory public hearing and do, because we actually can broadcast and make available the evidentiary hearings from here. And we just start doing that now.
Yeah, that's true.
At our very next hearing.
That's true.
Then just have the you know, more modest Jack or whoever, the go out to the public and have a 1 hour, 2 hour block of time for public testimony in the field.
We've done that in the past. So,
from a statutory requirement standpoint, I don't know if we can close it, but we could probably use the wording strongly encourage individuals to not participate. Commissioners will be, and commission staff will be conducting the meeting remotely or something. In other words, we're not going to be there.
Right.
Okay. I think we need to, I don't know if what we can or can't say, though. I don't think we can tell them we're shutting it down. I don't know if we can do that.
I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah. So strongly discourage.
No, I also don't go along with strongly discouraging. I think strongly encouraging people to use electronic or paper means of filing their comments.
I really don't care what the wording is.
Yeah.
Potatoes, potatoes. But.
Well, I don't think they're the same. Later on, when some group wants to protest this and comes out that, well, yeah, but we had been strongly discouraged from participating.
It says the same thing, though.
Well, the reality is people are being strongly discouraged from going to public gatherings.
Yeah. I think our role should COVID-19. Be to encourage them to use these alternative.
I would have methods. To think it would be, I can't imagine a group would come back, and I don't care how the wording is. I just essentially want to tell people, please, you know, until we get through this COVID-19 situation, I mean, who's going to come back and say, wow, we were strongly discouraged because of COVID-19? And I think any reasonable person would say, yeah, you were. But
we provided, there was a full opportunity to provide your comments in writing, and they were considered.
Because encouraging them to go online doesn't tell them to stay away. And if we just have to rip the Band-Aid off and
rather than saying we strongly discourage, I think we could say something a little bit more like, what other people are saying, the commission is encouraging people to follow the guidelines of, you know, the governor, CDC. Mm-hmm. Regarding public gatherings, you have this option for submitting your comments in writing, and then we just move on to have the evidentiary hearings available through the internet for watching live. And then they can, after the evidentiary hearing, they can send in comments for 5 more days. I think that's
better. I like that much better.
And then we just still have to, though, right, Jack? We still have to go there.
Yes.
So we still have to send somebody, a couple folks, to the site for that morning.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I mean, I've got bigger fish to fry in terms of how we word this, so I'm not going to get in a twist, and that's fine by me.
Stacey, does that clear some things up? I can work with you on the wording.
Yes. So just to clarify, the written comments will be available 5 days after. We're still going to look into whether video conferencing is available.
We're not doing that.
Okay.
We're going to have the evidentiary hearing here. We're not going to have the hearing down there. The hearing there is just going to be a public comment period, like we do for the rate cases.
Okay. Not to muck things up, but technically I think the hearing would be wherever Jack, for example, goes, and we're dialing in remotely to that hearing location in a sense.
No.
Well, we have to have the hearing in the county in which the facility is going to be sited. So to say that that's just providing access, I don't know. Does that matter how we do it?
I guess for point of clarification, we have to hold a public hearing in the county is my understanding, and I'll double check that language in the statute. But that doesn't mean that, I guess, if we're going to be try to be flexible with the law and to make accommodations, we would have to hold a public hearing there. That doesn't mean that we have to hold every hearing there, subsequent hearing there as well. Now, we have done that in the past. But if you go way back to extreme history of the Siting Act, my understanding is we used to do only the public portion there and the subsequent evidentiary hearings as well at the commission hearing room.
So how do we need to word it? Let's just say it's a brand new case, and they're going to have a hearing in a location. And we have to do it constitutionally. It has to be in the county, obviously. We know that. In which the facility will be sited. Seems to me that we're dialing in remote.
We talked about this yesterday. Exactly this thing. I thought we all agreed we would have the public meeting, just like we do rate cases. We don't have that hearing remote. We have the hearing here. We have the public input session at the site, and so decided yesterday that we were going to have the public input sessions on the site at the time and place of the notice, and then we could do the evidentiary hearing from here. So there wouldn't be any dialing into that location. Somebody would just be going there, having the discussion with us, taking the public input, coming back. We have the evidentiary hearing here with all the experts, and that's all broadcast for anybody to see. We hold the record open for 5 more days, so if anybody's listening and has concerns, they can send us written testimony, which will be part of the official record.
That's fine by me, as long as we can do it.
It is by me. I will reiterate what I said yesterday. I still prefer to have the evidentiary hearing before the public comment hearing so that they can have tuned in through our web links and then have had that explanation of what the project is and then respond to it, as opposed to letting them talk about something that's not even what's being proposed.
And I believe the question there was timing on our notices, but I think if I remember right, Jack, you said we should have time.
I'm sorry, I kind of hopped back into this one after I took that call. Which one are we, specific one are we speaking of?
March 30th.
March 30th.
Is the first
we
one coming
to talk
up.
About, sure. Randy, are you talking about, I mean, we have to make a distinction here between ones that haven't been noticed and moving forward and the ones that are already noticed and on the schedule.
Yeah. So that last was talking about probably future things. This one, this immediate one of March 30th, if that's the right date, it's already been noticed as being what it is. It's not like in that case we're taking our normal contingent. So kind of the distinction is, do we just follow through on how we noticed it and send two people as opposed to completely upending that process and sending one person? I think that one can continue as it's been noticed and as planned. That next one that we're talking about in Williston, there I think we could notice it differently yet and have the evidentiary part here and have the public input from there. But this Robinson Lake one on the 30th, I think that can just go through as proposed at this point.
Just a reminder that we have the recording on the web. So after the hearing, as soon as we get the recording on the web, the public has access to it.
Yeah. Well, so the Robinson Lake, so the company would bring in all their stuff.
They can minimize that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much of a like environmental footprint or anything involved there.
True.
I don't imagine they're bringing an army of people to talk about that either.
And there's not likely to be a lot of public input, I don't think, either. I haven't received any to this point.
So. Actually, otherwise,
but.
Then they need to bring those people here and do
Kay.
Two procedures.
So if we did it that way, just moved ahead as planned on that one, what's the next one after that? Isn't it just a couple days later?
One Oak. 2 days later, One Oak.
In Williston.
The real problem will come.
That one.
You know what? It doesn't actually.
I thought the next thing's like the 14th or something of April, yeah. But
there's
at
a
the Burke hearing.
That right. Is going dead.
They're in
McKenzie and Dunn counties, so I don't.
That's an informal hearing, Commissioner.
Oh, that's an informal. Right?
Because I think that's.
Well, that's here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's as a result of a waiver request, so we're holding a hearing.
So it's not the one that. 2 days from now. No, it's the one on.
It looks
the next
like
one is April
14th. April 14th. It looks
that's
like so. There's April. A there's a gap there of
and
time.
And that's the Burke divide, or that's the new
Liberty.
No, Liberty.
Oh, that's Liberty.
So that's the one that I think we need to focus on how we
that
separate.
One, and then the wind farm one.
And the wind farm one.
Okay. So for the one coming up on the 30th, I could leave it how it is, but just add in the 5-day written opportunity.
My opinion. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
And then we'll work on the future ones.
Jack, you are 100% comfortable that we meet all statutory requirements and meeting, you know, that requirement of having the hearing, quote unquote, in the county in which the facility is being cited.
Of course, the most comfortable I'd always be is doing things the exact way we've been doing it because we know it works. We know how we've been doing it. However, recognizing that we may have to be flexible in this environment, I went back just to the direct reading of the law and it says we have to hold a public hearing. It doesn't tell us how this public hearing has to be held or
right.
Who has to be there. And this a public hearing has to be held in the county. So. If we hold a public hearing in the county, we allow for the public input. That's all allowed to be.
And that's essentially the one person that goes.
Sure, or any format, whether it could be.
The hearing is in the county.
Right, it could be telephonically.
A public hearing.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
After that, it's up to your discretion.
Right, and we're in effect then.
Sure.
Yeah, I just don't want to have a conduct a hearing for a sighting of a facility and then find out we missed something because of wording or how we did it from a procedural stance. Right? I'm fine with doing it from here to the extent possible as long as we meet the technical requirements.
So then it's sounding to me like future ones, starting with Liberty and moving on to Burke Divide, our notices and press releases will basically indicate there's going to be two hearings. One is going to be here, and one is going to be in that county.
Well, those have already been noticed, both of those. So we can include it in the notice. We can include it in the news release. And we probably need to determine the timing of that. I personally think because it's noticed, it would be difficult to have the evidentiary hearing sooner because those were always,
and,
you know.
And maybe those become exceptions to my preference of having it sooner. That
yeah.
We do have to have it later, but we need to start working with the company on when those dates are going to be, when they're going to come here for the evidentiary hearing that works for us. That we've already chose those dates.
Right. Well, and maybe we give it a couple weeks before we spend too much time on those just to see how things are evolving here.
Yeah, that is
maybe things will fizzle
point.
Out and we'll be able to just carry on as planned.
But I do think, you know, like in, say, these two cases, there's got to be something more than whatever time on the 14th that's scheduled in Williston.
Williston.
People have kind of become accustomed to what our sighting hearings are and that they're going to come and listen and learn. I don't think we can send one person up there with a microphone and a tape recorder and say, okay, here's your hearing. What do you got to say? There's got to be something of a presentation, it seems to me.
Well,
the maps and We'll have to some find kind of an approved description of the process that can be read to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, having some type of a facility, though, where you can walk in and you can look at a monitor and you can actually see the proceeding as it's happening.
And then
because we're going to be broadcasting out of here. That's the point that you made earlier.
No, that's what I'm trying not to. I'm trying to explain that they're going to be separate. Like, we don't have to connect the public meeting to the hearing here.
People, I know we
can
don't
stay home and watch it on their own computers.
I know we don't have to, but why wouldn't we?
Because it's hard. It's a technical challenge, and I don't see when people could watch it from their. The whole point of staying here is to not have to do that, so people can just stay and watch it from their own computer at home.
Well, I don't know if I agree that it's that hard to connect the two so someone can interact as it's processing and questions may be raised in their mind.
Well, you're talking about interactive out in the field.
Well, to some extent. I'm just talking
having it broadcast and backhauled. Audio is not an issue at all. That will work fine from almost any venue we have. Mm-hmm. If you add video into there, now we have to deal with not only endpoints out there, but also what the bandwidth is coming out of some of those fairly remote areas.
I just look at this as a great opportunity to look at different ways in which to conduct these hearings. And, yeah, ideally I would like it interactive. You know, second is to do them at the same time where someone can see what's happening on the screen and still provide input when that time comes. If we just want to go to the basics and break the two apart, we can. But, you know, this to me is the future in terms of how we want to provide greater access to what we do.
And I don't disagree with that. I think in the immediate future, let's get what we have to have done, and then we can add the other things as we get the technology in place to mm-hmm. do it.
Let me ask this. I'm thinking of a new problem with all this. So people come into our normal sighting hearings, and there's a reason that we swear them in. That's different than providing some comments later on the website or something. They're providing sworn testimony and subjecting themselves to cross-examination. So when we do these remotely, what opportunity does someone have to do more than just a written comment, to actually be sworn in? And what opportunity does the company have to cross-examine them if they come in and say a bunch of things that the company contests as facts? How do we get to the bottom of that?
I guess specifically, I just want to make sure I understand which part. Are we talking about the 5-day comment period afterwards? Are we talking about being up there in the location?
No, I'm talking about the hearing, to the extent it's a hearing, and
it is, I mean, right,
of having it probably where people come in and want to testify.
Right, so the people who are coming in and are willing to testify, that it should be sworn, it should be taken. It is part of the evidentiary record.
So we'll need a judge there?
We'll need a judge, or we'll need to at least have counsel be appointed to do that at that point in time.
And the company will need to be there to cross-examine?
And the company should be there as well.
Which we envisioned in our discussion yesterday, right, with the company would give a shortened presentation of what the
right
what the project is, et cetera.
Right. I guess when we discussed it, I didn't envision we just send me up there and we just say, okay, all right, what do you guys have on this? I envision the company going up there, opening things up, providing a summary, again, explanation of the project to them. There wouldn't be subject to the commission questioning at that point in time. Then, of course, the testimony portion comes. Then, of course, They give their testimony, and this is all part of the record. And they may have additional things to provide, not just testimony. They may have documentation. They may have articles that they want us to look at as well.
So it sounds to me like it's almost the exact same thing as when we send a substantive ALJ. And the three of us don't go. Everybody else is still going.
Probably not all their not all their experts. They wouldn't give all their expert testimony and go through the whole case.
But they're going to give it here. So what's really benefited coronavirus-wise by them sending their legal counsel there, and then again here, and only bringing their experts here as opposed to having them there.
Well, the experts could be phoned to
right
here.
Can you swear someone
could be phoned
to
there too?
Yes.
Or could you, that you through have, interactive I mean, video?
Yeah. Yes.
Not to beat that dead horse, because sure. That.
But also, there's an additional benefit of not, if it is a larger hearing, having a group of people sitting together, waiting for an eight-hour hearing and sitting for that period of time, coming in and listening to a 20-minute to half-an-hour presentation and then providing their testimony.
And I could see it being three people or two even, one rep from the company and
sure.
One rep from us and whoever wants to show up in the public.
I think the companies are going to, you know, for one thing, they realize this isn't going to last forever,
right.
And they want to get their projects approved, cited, so when they're ready to move, they can move without facing what will likely be a logjam in some respects. But they're also going to want the capability of having some of their witnesses testify remotely, so they're not having to get on a plane or not trying to fight. And this might just go for the next 4, 6, 8 weeks, and then you know, it starts to phase out as quickly as we ramp something up.
But and I have reached
more over the phone that they'll present then, if we're not going to go interactive.
I mean, I guess that's why I'm thinking just keep it as simple as we can and have the bulk of the evidentiary hearing here for the few that maybe fall into this category, which may be none. I mean, sure. Who knows? Maybe we don't have to do any of them this way. But maybe the Liberty one would be the one that's most likely if it's still happening then.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to see how far we can stretch it. And we land where we land from a practical standpoint. If we can stretch it some more, fantastic. I'll be honest, there aren't many conference rooms in the country that don't have webcams and screens.
Sure.
Any, because that's how they're interacting with their employees in the field. I mean, that's almost a thing of the past that everyone, you know, goes to the location and they conduct their meetings. So they're working it through via webinar, et cetera, anyway. So I don't think it's that hard.
And I have reached out to all the different companies except for the one. We have a hearing on May 22nd, but up until that point, I've spoken with the representatives for each company at your direction. And they all do want to go forward as far as we can, and
yeah.
They're willing to work as flexibly as we feel necessary in order to accomplish
right.
What's necessary to move forward.
So we go proceed on the 30th as planned. On the 14th, now, does that mean we're going to do the public hearing up the time frame that's been scheduled and also the Burke Wind one and have a different date now that we got to find for those for the evidentiary hearing here? Or are we going to do them is the company going to spread their resources and be there and here?
I guess I would vote if we just now, and I think we need to reevaluate this in 2 weeks or whatever, but I would prefer that the public meeting or the public input session either be at the beginning or the end of the time of the day, right? Scheduled for, say, the start of the day, say 9:00 till 10:30 or something, and then the evidentiary hearing starts here. So they would have to split their staff. Or we start with the public hearing here and the person on site down on the location, we get the news out that this is, you know, says we're going to take public testimony at 3:00 or whatever, and we do the evidentiary hearing, and then the public testimony starts there the same day at whatever time is designated. So that would be my preference, is to just keep it in the same day. It would require the company to find some personnel who can summarize the case and get it be present on the noticed site. This is not going to, I don't know about Burke, or like the whole divide wind thing. I think that's a whole different issue. We got to think that one through. But just for Liberty, I think that would work.
I think so too.
Well, let's let staff take a crack at what we can do. Understanding what Chairman Crush's desires are, let's let them go back and figure out just exactly how to make this work. And we'll come back with what the real answer is exactly, but I think we know the direction we're headed. We just have to figure out the details. Staff can do that.
There might be a place in Williston that could happen. Yeah. The Public Works might be able to.
I bet they can. I think they got great technology.
Yeah. I bet they can do. At that site.
Well, with the oil and gas entities in Williston.
There's a number of places there that I'm quite certain we can manage.
I would say there's no fewer than 100 locations
in Williston.
Well,
we've already noticed it.
Pull it off.
Yep. Right. For the location, which is the Public Works site.
We don't have any flexibility in that, do we?
Changing the notice, no.
Yeah. Can't amend a notice. I don't think we can, for public accessibility, I dislike that location. For the technology, I doubt we can beat that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably true.
So in which case, you do the hearing and have the public testimony at the end via interactive video.
Yep.
That would work.
Okay. Is that pretty clear?
Nope.
The immediate
said just a quick question.
The immediate one for the 30th will go forward, and I'll add the 5-day written notice into it, and that's good. And we'll work on the other ones.
Okay. As far as I know, we have two more discussion matters. The first one's mine, and then the second one would be Stacy again to have us reclarify what we just said. Okay. Kidding on the second one. Yeah, there is. Just, and I don't know if we have to. I just had another question on the COVID-19 preparedness, and I don't know if it's more about just coordinating. We're all getting different correspondence. I think a lot of it is basically, I wouldn't call it off of a, it's very similar in nature in terms of what companies are doing. And is there any value for you, Stacy, in knowing what companies have responded or...
I'm getting notices from them, and I'm also getting the NARUC notices.
Right.
So, but I've gotten stuff from MDU, Otter Tail, Excel, CenturyLink.
Yeah.
So they're sending me their stuff.
Okay. All right. So we don't need a central clearinghouse. And the thing of it is, I also understand that as soon as one comes in, it's almost outdated 24 or 48 hours later, or it's changed and been modified and added to.
Well, I had asked also to talk about this today because I think we need to do something a little bit more formal with the utilities. I appreciate what they're sending us in terms of the disconnect and how they're treating, you know, having a lot of flexibility with their customers. But I don't want like real granular information, but I do think we should be getting some written filings from them or just memos outlining how they're addressing their, you know, some of their key operational issues, like the continuity of their control centers, the continuity of their generation facilities, their suppliers and fuel supply. How are they working with a emergency? You know, I've talked to General Dorman, but I don't know that they've actually worked this out either, but so if there does become a shelter-in-place order, I'm not saying I think this is going to happen, but if it happens, do the proper utility personnel have clearances from the powers that be to be able to go out and operate and fix a gas leak or reconnect service or do those sorts of things? So I would like a little bit more visibility from the utilities in terms of their plans in the operational side of things.
So then,
I don't know if that's a meeting with them or if we just send them a letter saying, could you send us your plan with this information and anything else you think is relevant or how we get it. But I think we should be asking those questions and getting that info.
So are you suggesting a big roundtable meeting that we've
No.
Well, I would suggest an interactive teleconference, but I'm not sure we can do that. So
hold on, that we can do.
I think it'd be very simple to just open up a docket for this and request just the things you were just saying. What are they doing to ensure continuity, fuel supplies, and coordination with local emergency services? I'm sure there may be some concern at times about what information to provide with a third one due to the fact that, you know, that trade secret, critical infrastructure protection, system plans, and so forth.
Yeah, but just to make sure that they are connected and feel that they have the, you know, made those connections. And also, what are, how are they maintaining the health of their key staff, making sure that they're not exposed to these viruses? I mean, I'm sure they're, I hope, and I'm confident that they're thinking about this. I just don't want something to happen and be like, comes back to us saying, well, why didn't you even ask about this? You had no idea this was going on.
Well, I can tell you that the answer is pretty simple. I've talked to Nicole Cavisto. I've spoken with Mr. Rogelsted. And they've been supplying plans. I talked to an MDU spokesperson yesterday, hence the, do we want a central location to, you know, continually add to, you know, our communication that we've had with them. MDU, for example, is going through telecommuting exercises to keep, to ensure essential functions continue to be completed as needed to ensure reliability. You know, we've got memos from both MDU and Great Plains, a subsidiary or division of MDU, in terms of what they're doing with late charges, et cetera, and things like that. But so there's just, I'm just trying to think of, well, how do we funnel this together? I got a call last night from, you know, you've talked to General Dorman. I got a call last night from Cody Schultz. Talked to Darren Hansen this morning. Jack is in communication now with the governor's office on an executive order.
Well, some of
that they're working on, and this all folds in together in terms of extending regulatory, statutory, and administrative deadlines.
Right. Which
so I think we need more than, I mean, we're all getting it.
We aren't. I haven't gotten any of the stuff I've outlined.
We're all getting different pieces. Let me rephrase it. And you don't know about things I'm getting. I don't know about things you're getting, Randy, et cetera. So
may I make a recommendation?
Open up
an iFile. Okay. Specifically, every correspondence that any of us receives, we can put it in.
Perfect.
That way we have a track record of every commissioner, every staff member, everything. It's
good.
Or if you get a call, you can just, like we're supposed to do with ex parte things, write a quick snippet of what was discussed and just file it in there.
And I would recommendation.
A lot of them are doing a lot of social media stuff, too. That's where I'm getting a lot of it. Like, I think almost all of them have closed their buildings off, their waiting rooms, so public can't come in anymore. And that's all been communicated over social media. So a lot of it I pick up through there, too, because I follow all their sites.
Jack, will you, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Will you send out, will you tee it up, or do you want, or will someone else tee that up and send out? That's perfect. That's what I was asked.
I think additionally we need to ask them for that information, the operational stuff.
Okay. I can, or Pat or I could send out a request to them, and we could just, that would be a good starting place for that iFile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's them?
The one regulated utilities, so the three electric and two gas. Or three gas, I guess.
I mean, I think just demonstrating to the public that they are being very specific in the measures they're taking. And, I mean, they're going full speed ahead on their end. It's just so we have it and we know, and we can communicate amongst ourselves as well as with the public as needed.
Sure.
Excellent.
To the extent that utilities want to, like, waive late charges and things like that, and to the extent that they might need to change their tariff to do that.
Right.
Do we have a process that want to set up a process for quickly working with those things?
Do they have to ask to have those waived, the late charges? Is that a formal?
I haven't checked all the tariffs, so I don't know which ones need to, but if a company does need to change their tariff in order to make any of these things happen.
Is that what you're working on, Jack? This waiver of what you mentioned a minute ago?
Yeah. No, I'm working on something specific.
I suppose in most cases it's going to take approval, because whatever they waive, next rate case, they're going to want to come back and recover that from the rest of the ratepayers.
I'd like to give them
Could you give staff the ability to approve those for the duration of the emergency declaration? Then they would die at the end of the emergency declaration. You wouldn't have to deal with it.
The governor's emergency declaration?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Is he going to terminate that?
We have to have a special meeting to approve that, or can we? Because we're not going to have something drawn.
We can make a motion right now and memorialize it.
Okay.
Probably afterwards.
Yep.
To direct staff to create a mechanism to provide.
To provide staff discretion to approve tariff changes during dependency of the emergency.
North Dakota Governor's
emergency. North Dakota Governor's emergency.
Declaration.
Okay. Repeat that, please.
Sure. It would be a motion to approve allowing staff discretion to approve tariff changes during the pendency of the
governor's emergency declaration.
To approve tariff changes
during the pendency of the governor's emergency declaration.
Any tariff changes then? Well, any and all tariff changes?
Yeah.
You realize it's a discretion, so if it's a $1 million rate increase, I hope that you would not
want to make that. Okay.
Well, I don't know if we could make it a little more specific. Like, no?
You have staff. They should know their job.
Oh, staff is going to allow
this. Yes.
Okay, staff approval. Sorry.
Right. Staff discretion to approve these.
Yeah, no. That's right. I'm fine with that.
So this is like...
I thought we were giving them
late fees.
Change of tariffs without asking.
What ones are we talking about that we're aware of?
We're talking one from MDU, one from Great Plains, it's worded, hereby advises North Dakota Public Service Commission of the company's intent to deviate from its general provisions, rate 100 gas and electric tariffs, and waive the late payment charge provision provided for under these tariffs starting April 1st, 2020. So in other words, just giving them the ability to waive late charges. And I think that's the same for, it's the same for both.
So something like that, staff, I would find very reasonable. Now, if they said, we're going to waive like all, you know, anything that doesn't come in, or it's just could become a license for everybody to just not pay their bills for a few months and it'll be permanently waived. I wouldn't find that so approvable.
I think this to me is similar to the footprint law and that discussion we had in terms of using discretion on when we need to be involved and pulled in and when you can just move ahead to expedite what I think are comments. You know, very reasonable request that just from a common sense standpoint, you'd be able to look at and say, yes, that's good. And then a mechanism, of course, so we just know that it occurred. And I guess that would probably be in the iFile because it might land in there as well.
Should land in there as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So if I make that motion, any other discussion on it?
Let's get a motion and a second, and then if there's discussion, we can have it.
Okay. But in terms of the motion itself, no additions? Okay. Randy, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. You're smiling over there, so. Okay, I move the commission approved to allow staff discretion to approve tariff changes during dependency of the governor's emergency declaration.
Second.
A motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Do we need to have that written and signed as well, Jack?
We'll do. Not signed, but written.
Okay. All right. Very good. Anything else?
the longer we stay.
We're adjourned.
Oh, this is for schedule.